Amareva.
Okay, we're starting from Mem Zayin Amabet, five lines from the bottom, Amareva. So we're in the middle of this mission that's basically establishing what the rights of the woman's property, what goes to her husband, let's start from the beginning. What things the father gets from her, and what things he's responsible for, and what things the husband gets from the wife, and what things he's responsible for. One thing I came across that I thought was very interesting is that the father is not chayav a mizono to the daughter.
When she's an era.
Right. He doesn't have to, I think even when she's a ktana, he doesn't have a halachic right to provide her with food. Right. A halachic obligation. Thank you. He doesn't have a halachic obligation to provide her with food. He can, and he should, you know, and most likely he does. Now, it could be they didn't establish, you could think about it, they didn't establish a chovah because they just knew it was obvious that a father was going to take care of his daughter, whereas with a husband, they had to establish it as one of the chovot because maybe it wouldn't be so obvious. You know, maybe sometimes husbands might not necessarily take care of it. What do you want to say?
I find that hard to believe that they would assume that it's obvious if they're already talking about when she's like 3 or 5 or 7 or however, whatever age, he can marry her off and do so many other things.
They wouldn't establish that he's chayav and mizono. Right.
Doesn't fit into the larger picture.
Maybe it's included in another obligation, like in terms of a different.
But it seems that he's really not obligated. That's what it seemed to be. He really does not obligated to give her food. From a halachic standpoint.
Right.
So, I know, something to think about.
Is he required to give his son food?
I don't think so. I don't think it's any of his children. Although I think there is an issue when they're under 6, maybe. When they're under 6, I think he might be, I forget how it works out.
Well,
something to look into further.
To provide for his wife, and she's inherently going to provide for the children.
Uh-huh.
Because of her nurture.
Mm-hmm. You could look at it from that perspective. Okay. Anyway, something to think about. Unless I misunderstood, but I think it was pretty clear, right, that he's not, I mean, it certainly doesn't say it here, right? It specifically says that yeter alav habal shochel peirot b'chayav b'chayav b'mizonoteo b'pirkunah g'furata, right? So there it seems that he's chayav in these things that the father is not chayav in. It seems pretty clear. Okay, something for further research. Okay, now we're going to get to chiyuv mizonot of the husband. So now we're going to see that there's a machloket. Is the husband chayav mizono for the wife, midoraita or midorabanan? So it all depends, and I charted it out here on the sheet, how you understand the chiyuvim of sher, ksut, and ona. Okay, they're generally understood to mean the first one, which is Tanakama's opinion. You can already look on the sheet. Sher is mizonot, ksut is begadim, and ona is tashmish. But we're going to see that not everybody agrees with that. So Rava's going to first say, Hai Tana Sever Mizono Mida Oraita. The Tana of this Braita, meaning the Tana Kama, holds the Mizono, the Chiyuv Mizono of the husband to the wife is Mida Oraita. Titania, She'era, Elu Mizono, V'chein Omer, and here they're going to bring Psukim to prove it, V'asher Achlu She'er Imi. Okay, so here you see, She'er has to do with food. Suta Kimashmao, Suta means Begadim. That was an obvious one. Onata zo ona ha'amura b'torah. What is ona? Ona is tashmish. Why is it tashmish? Because ona means a time, right? And the husband has a chiyuv to the wife. We'll get to exactly what these chiyuvim are and how much time, depending on what kind of person you are. There's a chiyuv to basically sleep with your wife, have sex with her, at certain time periods, okay? Within, you know, a certain frequency. So that's what ona is. That's the first opinion. But like I said, this is the typical opinion. If you ask the general guy on the street who knows this kind of stuff, you know, man, woman, that's what they'll say. Sher, ksut, and onah are these three things. And here's his proof for the last one. Well, how do you know onah has to do with tashmish? V'cheinu omer v'achlu, im ta'aned b'notai. Okay, that's with Lavan. He says to Yaakov, im ta'aned b'notai, okay, in other words, swear to me that you're not going to, right, im ta'aned b'notai means that you are going to, it doesn't necessarily mean this, but this is how they're understanding it, that you promise that you will not refrain from having sex with them and giving them what they deserve. Rabbi Elazar, it's an interesting thing for a father-in-law to tell the son-in-law, right? Make sure to have sex with my daughters. Rabbi Elazar Omer, she'era zo ona, he flips it. He says, no, she'er is onah. Why? Okay, you might recall this pasuk. B'cheinu omer, ish ish al kol she'er b'saro lo tukavu l'galot ervata. She'er means being close to somebody, okay? Relative is called she'er, right? It's all about closeness. So she'er doesn't have to do with food. She'er is onah. And then, what's he going to do with the other one, right? So we'll see in a minute. Ksuta kemashmo, that stays the same. Onata elo mizonot, he flips it. Oh, ona must be mizonot. How do you get that? V'cheinu omer v'ya'ancha v'yar'ivecha. Ona means you can't torture her from inui. You can't torture her by starving her. Okay, and there's the pasuk v'ya'ancha v'yar'ivecha, right? They were tortured and I made you hungry. Right, and then that would be, right, that was v'ya'ancha v'yar'ivecha v'yochelcha taman asher lo yadata, right? So, okay, that, you see, it's mentioned in the context of food, where God gave us the man. Okay, so there, that's interpretation number two. Now we're going to see another two. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer she'era ksuta lefum she'era. Okay, what he does is like this. He says she'er ksut ve'ona, she'er and ksut go together, and then ona and ksut go together. What does this mean? And it all refers to, okay, now we're going to see two different approaches. The first approach is everything refers to food. Okay, I'm sorry, everything refers to clothes. It's all defining the chiyuv of begadim. Okay, in which case, now remember, the first two interpretations, what was our whole starter? This shows that mizonot is midoraita. His chiyuv mizonot for the wife is midoraita, and that we see from this pasuk. So the first two had chiyuv mizonot daraita, one learning it from she'er and one learning it from ona, fine, whether ona is tashmish or she'er is tashmish, and the other one is mizonot. But now we're going to see two interpretations that think that neither of them has to do with food. Either the main topic is the clothing, and each word is defining the clothing, or the main thing is the she'er, and each one, the tashmish, and each one has to do somehow with the tashmish. So we'll read the two interpretations. So lefum she'era, lefum is lefi. Lefi she'era, according to, what is she'er? What did we say? It's closeness, but it's also basar. So what does that mean? According to her basar tank suta. Okay, according to her build, according to who she is. Okay, here we're going to see what they interpret. Shelo yitein la shel yalda l'skena, v'lo shel skena l'yalda. What's the assumption? That iskena needs more clothing to warm their bodies. So if you're married to iskena, you have to give her more clothing. You have to buy her more items, more jackets, more blankets. Ve'onata. Now you're going to see how this, and this is a little easier, right? Suta ve'onata. Lefum onata. Tank suta, right? According to the season. In the winter, so you'll have to give her more clothing. In the summer, less clothing. Shelo yitein chadashim b'yimot hachama v'lo shchakim b'yimot hagshamim. Here they don't say it exactly the way we would say it, right? You need newer clothing in the winter because, right, I don't know if you have this book. My mother always read us this book and she bought it for my kids. Charlie needs a cloak. And what happened, you know, the story, Tommy DePaulo book? Anyway, he has a cloak, and over the, throughout the season, the sheep eat his cloak up. And by the end of the season, he's got no cloak. So then he spends the whole season, you know, basically making a new coat for the winter. So you see, for the winter, you need new clothing. In the summer, if your outfit is shredded, it doesn't really matter because you won't be so cold.
This
it's okay.
The newer fabric is thicker. And right. By the time the season is over, it's worn
right.
out and thinner.
Right,
so
it's
worn
right. So fibers. Thinner, and torn. Exactly. So that's all saying that she'er ksut is according to who she is, you know, her body or who she is, and the onah ksut is according to the season. Tani Rav Yosef, right? And then you would have to say the mizonot is only a takana of the chachamim, okay, which might help us a little bit in terms of if the Torah doesn't establish a chiyuv mizonot for the father, also doesn't establish it for the husband. It was just a takana because we started off the shiur for those who came late, sort of raising this issue, why is the father not obligated in mizonot? And here, if you say it's only derabanan, so you can see there really is no obligation for anyone for mizonot, but the rabbis instituted it for the husband just so that if a husband wasn't going to take care of his wife, you know, we make sure that the wife is taken care of. Tanei Rav Yosef, she'era zo kiruv basar. Here's a really interesting one. It means you owe her to have a closeness of your bodies. Shelo yinhag ba minhag parsiim shemishamshim mitotehem belivushehen. They have sex while they're fully clothed. Okay? So this is interesting. So the halacha is saying you shouldn't do like this minhag. okay, that they have sex with their wives in their clothing. And this supports Rav Huna. Okay, if the husband says it's the only way I can do it, and the Mefarshim explained, even if it's mishum tzniut, and he says it's just not tzanua for me to have sex without my clothes and without her clothing, she can demand a divorce, and he has to give the ketubah, and that's not an appropriate relationship. Very interesting that they bring this up, and that's what it means she'er. Okay, now. The Ramban on the Torah here expounds on this and explains the other words according to that also. So I brought this in. He says basically they're all referring, all of them are referring, because here it's just talking about the She'er. It doesn't talk about the other two. But the Ramban explains according to this interpretation that all of it has to do with Tashmish. And what's Ksut? Ksut is not clothing. Ksut is the sheets on the bed. You have to have covering on the bed. And you have to have kirub basar, and then the ona we relate to how often do you have to have tashmish. Okay? Okay, so that's all the issue of sher ksut and ona. And again, as I said, it was all prefaced by the Tana Kama and Rabbi Elazar both hold the mezonot are d'oraita, but we see that there's two other interpretations. The mezonot aren't necessarily d'oraita, or they're not d'oraita, and therefore they're takana chachamim. And I think it's the Rambam who dafka quotes it as it's takana chachamim. I think maybe there's others, but anyway, it's a machloket among the mefarshim whether we hold the mezonot to d'oraita or to rabbanan. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now we get to this really interesting line in the Mishnah. Okay, if you remember, we learned this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu anisha b'Yisrael. By the way, we're getting up to Pesach. This is the exact same lashon. If you're familiar with the Mishnah of Arvei Pesachim, the first Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim says afilu anisha b'Yisrael lo yifchot mi dalid kosot. You have to have 4 cups of wine on Pesach. And here we have the exact same lashon. Afilu anish of Israel lo yifchot mishnei chalilim u'mekonenet. Okay, if you're going to compare the two, right? Arba kosot. Wow, that's like a big deal. Here we're talking about that you have to have 2 people blowing the flutes and a woman who's crying at the funeral. It seems a little odd to us. We talked about we learned the Mishnah that this was some old minhag that eventually, according to the Koran, eventually it got knocked out because people said it's a minhag based on the minhag goyim. It's interesting. Now we're going to get into very interestingly. What if they come from different types of families, and what's the expectation, and does it go by his family, her family? Let's say, right, there's certain standards, right? Everybody's family has a different standard, right? When you go to get married, right, the bride's family expects the wedding to look one way, and the groom's family expects the wedding to look a different way, and you have to come and find some balance. So now we're going to see how relevant is all this in general, and what happens when she's dead already? Do all those factors still factor in? If she's no longer alive, well, who do we go by? Do we still have to go by? We'll see. We'll talk about it in a second. So, afilu anisha b'Yisrael. So now, michlal, they say from here, what can you infer? Detana kama savar hane lo. Right? It sounds like if Rabbi Yehuda is adding this, the Tana Kama thinks he's just chayav to bury her, but he doesn't have to have shnei chalilim in a mekonenet. So now they're going to say, hey, chidami, what would be the case that Tana Kama wouldn't need to provide for this? E de orche. If it's that it's his common custom, my time to Tana Kama da Amar Lo. If his family had the minhag to always have shnei chalilim in a mekonenet, so why would they say that he doesn't have to provide that for her? Obviously, he would. V'id alav. Oh, I'm sorry. Id orcha is her. My mistake. If it was the minhag in her family that everyone always had shnei chalilim in a mekonenet, then obviously he would have to provide that. V'id lav orcha, my time into Rabbi Yehuda. And if it's not her way to go like that, nobody in her family gets shnei chalilim in a mekonenet, so then why does Rabbi Yehuda insist that she have a shnei chalilim in a mekonenet? And it's what they're basically saying is, this is something that's minhag dependent, right? It depends. If it's your family minhag, it's your family minhag, and you have to do it. If it's not your family minhag, well, then obviously you don't need to do this. This is not halacha. It's not like arba kosot. So, if it's her minhag, so then why wouldn't they both agree that you have to have it? And if it's not her minhag, why would Rabbi Yehuda think you have to have it? So what do they answer? Lo tzricha, the case where they have a machloket is, kigon de orche dide, it's his custom and not her custom. The lav orcha dida. Okay, dide is him and dida is her. So if it was his custom, it was her custom, but not his custom, Tanakama savar, Ki amrinan ola imo ve'ena yored imo. This is a really interesting halacha. We're going to get to this on Samach Aleph. Okay? When it says that when they get married, what happens? She goes up to his level. Let's say she comes from a family of less and he comes from a family of more means. So she rises up to his level, and the expectation is that he provide for her. This is very interesting, okay? In terms of all the chiyuvim he has to provide for, he has to provide for her, you know, food, clothing, right? Everybody knows there's a wide range of what that could mean. So if she she comes from less and he comes from more, she jumps up to his level and he has to provide for her on his level. Ve'ena yoredet imo, and this is a really interesting one. If he doesn't have, right, I don't know how they expect him to rise to this, but if she comes from a family of means, he has to provide for her according to what she's used to. Okay? So now, you might say, though, Tanakama says that is true when it comes to food, clothing, okay? All those things while she's still alive. Hane mile mechayim. Aval la'achar mita lo. But once she's dead, he doesn't have to provide for her on her level if he's not at that level, okay? That's what he would be saying. Rabbi Yehuda Savar afilu la'achar mita. Okay, very interesting, right? It's an interesting conceptual machloket. What happens, right, after she's dead, does he still need to continue to provide for her on that level she was used to? You would think that yes, because when people die, right, it's all kind of a reflection of their life, right? People who dress well in, you know, in life, so then when they get buried, they want it to be mechubad. And people who, you know, maybe that's less important to them, maybe in death wouldn't care as much. So anyway, the machloket between them is, does it still apply after death or not?
Was this discussion after the takana or before the takana that everybody would be dressed in
tachrichim? Ah, right. It must be before the takana of everyone dressed in tachrichim, because otherwise, right.
You're talking about the ceremony and not.
But although, right, so you're saying that in the end they tried to, right, so we learned this sugya about the tachrichim, that Rabban Gamliel specifically, who was wealthy, and he made a takana that everyone's going to be buried in tachrichim. But it's not clear, it seems clear though, that had to do with maybe what they're buried in. But not necessarily the ceremony of the right? Also, I don't know if Shnech, assuming that they're being mechayev, it's actually interesting because what you're saying is the sugya is the exact flip of it. Here we're saying the ani, who can't afford anything, has to at least minimally provide for this.
Right? The Shnech Halilim.
Right, but it could be very much so that this is minimum. The question also is, it's not so clear cut, but does the machloket extend to all sorts of other things? In other words, the Mishnah says it's this Shnei Chalilim and a Mekonen, it is the basic, and you have to provide that for everybody. But then they're saying that that's only in the case where she's used, right? And the whole machloket between them is in a case where it was her way but not his way, and yet he still needs to provide that. What about all the other things? Are all the other things also included in the machloket? If we want to step up levels of more than Shnei Chalilim and a Mekonen and whatever else went on at the ceremony, it's not so clear-cut if their machloket extends all the way to there, or we're just talking about basics. Like, this is basics, and basics he needs to provide, even if it's not something that he normally provided. But if that was basic for her, then he needs to provide it. Once you take this mission out of context the way the Gemara is, and sort of, it becomes very unclear, like, what we're talking about. Is it all different levels? Does he have to provide at any level? Does it, you know, it's very hard to understand once they take it out of context. The Mishnah itself seems to be talking just about the Shnei Chalilim and Mekonen. Once you say it's all about what his custom, her custom, it could be it extends to all sorts of things. Okay. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, Halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, interestingly enough, they paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that he has to provide for, even in her death, the same that he would have provided her in life. Va'amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva. Now we're moving to something else that Rav Chista said in the name of Mar Ukva. Misha Nishtata. Okay, if somebody loses their mind, okay, they were sane and now they're not so sane anymore, and he's married to this woman, and he no longer, you know, can deal with his money on his own. Beitin yordim lenechasav v'zanim u'mefarnesim et ishto u'banav u'bnotav v'davar acher. Now here you see the issue of the banav u'bnotav, right? That he does have to provide for them, okay? We'll see. We'll talk about this in the context of what we discussed before, because we said before he doesn't, right? But now we're saying, right, he doesn't have an obligation necessarily. On the other hand, if he's no longer sane, the Beitin can come in and say, we're going into your estate, we're taking money, and we're going to provide food for your wife, your sons, your daughters, and Davar Acher, which right now we're going to leave on the side. We don't know what it is. The Gemara is going to say what it is. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. Maishna mehadatanya. Wait a minute. What you're saying, why is it different than this braita? What does the braita say? Mi shehalach lemedinat hayam v'ishto tova mizonot. Let's say the husband goes abroad, leaves the wife alone. She has no access to his bank account, right? It's not like nowadays where most people have joint accounts, right? He's got his bank account or wherever his money is, and he's not providing, right? He took off, and she needs money to survive. So it's really the same situation, right? Either he goes crazy or he leaves. So at this point, they're assuming it's the same situation. So what happens in this case? Beidim yordim lenechasav, vizanim umefarnesim et ishto. Avalo banav ubnotav velo davar acher. Okay? They can go into the money that he owns and provide for the wife. What does it mean basically, right? I don't think he had a bank account really. What would they do? They would sell his property and go from the property, they would give it to the woman to live off. But not for the children. This goes back to what we started with, that there's no chiyuv mizono to provide for your children. So not for the children and not for davar acher. So again, we don't know yet what this is. Amar lei, so now he answers him, don't compare these two cases. V'lo shanelach ben yotzei ladat liyotzei shelo ladat. In other words, what's the assumption here? Yes, we assume a father's going to provide for his children, naturally. So therefore, if the husband goes insane and he no longer can make decisions, so we're assuming that if he were sane, what would he do? He'd be providing for his wife, for his children, and for this davar acher, which we'll see what it is. But if the husband takes off and doesn't provide for the wife before he leaves and the children, what's the assumption? Maybe he really wasn't planning to provide for them. Now the wife, he has a chiyuv, right? Either chiyuv d'oraita of mizonot or chiyuv d'rabbanan takana chachamim, like we discussed in the beginning. In any case, he has a chiyuv to provide for her. So the Beit Din can come along and say, right, we're taking your nechasim, we're selling them, and we're providing for your wife. But when it comes to the children, it's not the same. Right, the children, he doesn't have an obligation, and maybe he really didn't intend to. If he left and didn't provide for them, well, maybe that was his intent, and he didn't want to. So therefore, we don't force him to in that case. And that's why
they have to be older than six.
It says there, right? So that's why I guess it goes back to what I said before, that I was pretty sure there was a distinction between children under six and children over six. So I guess you're confirming that. So children under six, he does need to provide for, but children over six, I think the assumption is they can start providing for themselves. I mean, hard to imagine a six-year-old, what?
We haven't gotten to it yet. It's a 65B.
Uh-huh, right. We'll see it when we get there. Okay? Samachay. So now we want to know, my davar acher. Rav Chista Amar Zeh Tachshit. Rav Yosef Omer Tzedaka. Okay, this is interesting. Rav Chista says this means that he has to provide her. Now, this is only in the case where he goes insane, right? Then we assume that he'd be providing tachshit. Now, the Mefarshim explained that tachshit doesn't mean jewelry. It means, okay, we'll put it, means bosem, which I'll put it in our terms, deodorant, basically. Okay? That was, right, it was to just make her presentable. It wasn't even just, you know, to make her look beautiful, but presentable. People in those days, again, remember, they didn't shower so often, and, you know, if they didn't have bosem on them, it was pretty embarrassing. So the assumption is he'd provide her with a tachshit, and Rav Yosef says he'd provide her with money to give to tzedakah. Okay, interesting. So she can basically, right, demand from the Beit Din to give her money for tzedakah, whereas if he doesn't, right, remember, if he goes abroad, then we don't give her money for these things. We only give her money for food and not for anything else, because the assumption was he wasn't planning to provide for her. Now you could say, if it's tachshitim, right, why doesn't he want to provide for her when he's away? Because he doesn't want her looking beautiful to other men, right? He wants her looking disgusting. So Amar Rav Chista zeh tachshit, Rav Yosef Amar zeh tzedaka. So now they say man de Amar tachshit kol shekein tzedaka. Whoever says we're going to give her money for tachshit, or we're not, let's go the other way. The Gemara is going to go the other way. If we're not going to give her money for tachshitim in the case where he goes abroad, obviously we're not going to give her money for tzedaka. And man de Amar tzedaka aval tachshit yehavina la. But if you say that what we're not allowed to provide for in the case where he goes abroad is staka, you might say that he would allow her to go around with the tachshit, why, or to have money for tachshit, or really bosem, why? Delo nichale detinavel. So here's the other approach, which is if he goes abroad, right, she's still his wife, and she's still representing his wife. And if she goes around looking disgusting, people are going to say, oh, look at so-and-so's wife, and it's going to look embarrassing for him.
Right.
So it could be that he wants her still to be in reasonable shape and, you know, reserve for him later, although you could really say the opposite in terms of, you know, she doesn't want him to be, he doesn't want her to be attractive to other people.
You can also say the same about Staka,
mm-hmm.
in terms of his giving. Because he, when she gives Staka, she's not...
She's giving for him, basically.
Right.
She represents the property.
She represents, right.
Right. Which
is why, in a sense, they say she can't give. Although there's a discussion at some other point that if she comes in with her own money, she can give from her own.
Uh-huh. She can give from her own money, right, but...
And more. I mean, whatever.
Okay. Okay. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Avin. Amar Rav. Amar Rav Huna, sorry. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Avin. Amar Rav Huna. Mi shahalach lemedinat hayam... Umeta ishto. Okay, he goes to Medina Hayam and his wife dies. Now, who's going to bury her, right? He's supposed to provide for her burial. So, beitin yordim lenechasa v'kovrin ota lefik vodo. Okay, so now they say, what do you mean, lefik vodo? Remember, this is all the discussion we had, according to his standards. Lefik vodo v'lo lefik voda? So, what do they answer? Ema af lefik vodo. Okay, in other words, it means... Even lefik vodo, if his kavod is higher than her kavod. Even though, why would you think it would be a difference, right? Because he's not there. So maybe it's again the same thing. She has to keep her standards to the standards they were when he was around. She needs to have the bosom on, right? She needs to, because, right, according to at least the one interpretation, because it, she is a representative of him. So ha kamashula, what does this teach you? Like we saw before, ole imo ve'ena yuredet imo v'afidu la'achar mita. Okay, this again matches Rabbi Yehuda that she goes up and doesn't go down even after death. Amar Rav Matna ha'omer imeta lo tikperua minechasav shomin lo. If he says he's on his deathbed, okay, that's the way the Mefreshim understand this. He's on his deathbed and he says, if when she dies, okay, it's interesting. He says if she dies. Okay, obviously she's going to die, right? When she really means when she dies, don't bury her for my money. So we listen to him. Maishna ki amar nafle nichse kame yatme ki lo amar. Okay, they're saying now, if he says, if she dies, what happens? When he dies, what happens to his money? So it goes to his children, except for what? Her ketubah money. Her ketubah money she demands. Now remember, in the ketubah, part of the ketubah heskem is what we learned in the Mishnah, that she gets burial, right? She gets buried. So what is he basically saying? Don't take it from, right, what, let's just talk about order of events. What happens? He dies. All is, right, first she gets the ketubah money, and everything else goes to the Yorshim. So she gets the ketubah money. So now... It's supposed to be taken, the burial is what he's saying, don't take it from your Yerusha, take it from the ketubah money. That's where the burial money is supposed to come from the pot of the ketubah money. So now they're saying, Maishna ki amar, right? And what does it make a difference if he says this? Okay? Dinafli nichse kamayatme, right? Because what, then we're going to say, right, the nechasim go to the yitomim, because ki lo amar nami nichse kamayatme ramu. In other words, it's the same thing whether he says, don't bury her for my money, or he doesn't. In any case, the nechasim fall to the atonement. She gets her ketubah money, and the money should be paid out from her ketubah money. It shouldn't make a difference whether he stipulates that this should be the case. It should be the case no matter what. Ella, so they say, okay, so you misunderstood what Rav Matna said. This wasn't what Rav Matna said at all. Because no matter what, it comes from her ketubah money and not from the Yerusha of the children. Because remember, not all the children are her children necessarily. They could be children from other marriages. They don't need to pay for her burial. But what did he really mean to say? When Rav Matna said this, this is what he said. Ela ha'omer imet hu lo tikberuhu minechasav ein shomin lo. If he says, if I die, then, 1 second, right. If he says, when I die, don't bury me from my estate. Keep my estate for your mezonot and go get from staka money to bury me. Okay? Ein shomin lo. Because lo koli menu shiashiret banavi apil atzmo alat zibur. He's not allowed to basically say to his kids, you know, you can be wealthy, but, you know, keep your money for yourselves and just, you know, claim I have no money and go get it from staka. That you can't do. Okay, I don't know why you would need to tell him this. I think it would be a pretty obvious halacha that If there was money in the estate, then obviously it's going to go to pay for his burial.
It's like day school financial aid.
Uh-huh.
For people who apply for financial aid but don't need it.
Right. Right, exactly. So that's right. That's a good comparison. It's basically saying don't go to get stuck on money if you have and you can pay it. Okay. You know, basically, I think what they're saying is he doesn't want his kids to end up being burdened by having to beg for tzedakah. So he's saying, I'll take the tzedakah, you know, and you guys will live off. I'm assuming he's not a super wealthy guy. He doesn't have enough to provide for everything. So he's saying, you know, but they're saying the order of events is first you deal, your money goes to yourself. Whatever's left goes to your kids. And if they have to end up asking for tzedakah, that, you know, then that will be. Okay, new Mishnah. La'olam, now we're going to talk about what's the moment. Okay, we've talked about what the husband gets, what she gets when she gets married. We're going to talk about various things, about what he gets when they get married, what she gets when they get married. At what point are they considered married, that all these things start ticking, and is it the same for everything or different? We're going to have a whole discussion about it, okay? You can see that there's a chart on the sheet. It starts it. Okay. Le'olam hi b'reshut ha'av ad shetikhanes l'reshut ha'bal l'nisuin. Okay, the Mishnah says something which seems pretty clear-cut, but it's really not so clear-cut. She is always, which seems to include for everything, okay? She's considered in her father's reshut until she goes into the husband's reshut for marriage. Okay, what that means is not going to be very clear, right? What does that mean? Does that mean she went into the chuppah, she walked into his house, she, you know, they had yichud? What exactly does it mean? We even talked about Mesira l'chupa isn't so clear. Chupa could be she goes into his house. Chupa could be they go under a canopy. There's different interpretations of what chupa even is.
It's discountable state of
Erusin. Well, it doesn't discount the state of Erusin. What it says is in Erusin, which we already knew, she's still... Okay, let's take the classic example. Mifirim nidareha. Who's Mifirim nidareha? Both the father and the husband. So this means she's still, it says, exactly, she's still in the reshut of her father, meaning that she's not fully in the reshut of her husband yet. In other words, for example, they both be mefer and nedareha. Now remember, we learned the other day that when she's in that in-between stage, they both together have to be mefer and nedareha. They both have to say, we're being mefer and nedareim, we're canceling her vows together. So she still has her father's authority over her for various things. It's going to affect truma. It's going to, what about her property? Okay, for example, this happens often. Someone's engaged, right? They get gifts, right, for their engagement. Or the family buys something for the couple, right? And then they break their engagement, let's say. So now, nowadays, so engagement doesn't mean anything. But in those days, if engagement was halachic, right, and you got property, right, let's say the bride's family buys property for the couple, and then she dies, right? Something happens. What happens to that property? Does the husband have to give it back, or does it become his? Okay? So it's a big question, right? At what point at which stage is it considered his? How does it work, right?
So
you would all agree.
The dowry discussion that we had, yes,
right, it's like the dowry discussion, exactly. Right. Now, if this is all, right, this is going to be related to the dowry. Now, if, right, you all agree that if a couple gets married and let's say the bride's family buys a house for them, and then the, you know, 5 years later the wife dies, okay, right, it's unlikely, now it could be, depending on the situation, the family, right, or it's tricky at that point, but is the family going to say, well, that house belongs to us and give it back? You know, it becomes very tricky. But you can see that at this early stage, it's a little simpler, right? They haven't even yet been married. So at what stage, once they're already married and they're using the property together, it becomes much more complicated. So the question is, at what stage do we say that they're married for Yerusha, for Truma? Does she get to eat Truma? Remember, we also, right, the Erusin, she's not allowed to eat the Truma yet, if, right, or vice versa, right? If she's going into marrying a Kohen, she can't eat Truma until she's married. So again, at what stage exactly? So here they say, Achetikanes l'reshut habal l'nisuin. Basically, it sounds like when she leaves her father's house and goes into the husband's house to get married. It's clear they're not yet married. So now they're going to give a bunch of situations. Masar ha'av l'shluchei habal. What if the father gives her over? Okay, she, right, here's the father's house. Here's the chatan's house. And, you know, the father walks out the door, the shlichim of the husband come, and they escort her to his house. As soon as they begin escorting her, and the father's no longer with her, and it sounds like when you walk down the aisle, right? There's some people who walk down the aisle, and the father and mother take her all the way, and then there's some people who they stop, and then the chatan comes and brings her down the aisle the rest of the way. It's almost like that. You can imagine this procession happening. So if the father gives her to the shluchei habal, harehi berishut habal, she's already then considered the rishut of the baal for these things. Halacha av im shluchei habal, but if the father escorts her with the shlichim, obviously this means if the husband himself also, it's just saying even the shlichim can function like him, or the father sent messengers of his to go with the messengers of the Baal, then harehi b'reshut ha'av, she's still not in the reshut of the husband yet. Misarosh shluchei ha'av l'shluchei ha'baal, but if the shlichim of the father escort her and then they transfer her to the shlichim of the Baal, harehi b'reshut ha'baal. Okay, this is fairly clear cut. Now the Gemara says, "My la'olam." Why does it say la'olam hebrew shutabal? So now they say, right? If, when you say this is the truth, right? Usually you say that because it's not so clear it's the truth, because someone else thinks otherwise. So why do they have to say la'olam? This is the case, right? Always la'fluke mi mishnah rishona, because there was an earlier mishnah which this our mishnah is going against. Ditznan higiazman velo nisu. This we learned in the beginning of our Masechet, if you recall. Ochlot mishelova ochlot petruma. Kamash malan la'olam. Therefore, our Mishnah is teaching you it's not the case. What does that mean? Do you remember from the Erusin, it was about a year, right? And then the clock starts ticking. And if a year comes up and he doesn't marry her, what do we say? From that moment, he's chayav mizonot, right? Except what did we say? If that day fell out on a Sunday, right? That was the whole chiddush of our Mishnah. If that day falls on a Sunday, what are we going to say? Since people get married on Wednesday, right? The clock doesn't start ticking on Wednesday, on Sunday. He doesn't have to provide mizonot from Sunday, but he has to start providing mizonot from Wednesday. So now, those who say, right, the Mishnah Rishona says, as soon as higiazman, even if he doesn't marry her, and she's still in her father's house, she starts eating from his food, and she eats truma. So if he's a Kohen. So kamash malan, our Mishnah teaches you that's not the case. It's not from when the date starts that he's supposed to marry her. It's from when she actually leaves her father's house and goes into the husband's house. If you recall, there were two reasons why she doesn't eat truma. One was because we're worried that if she eats truma in the house of her father, people are going to get mix up the foods and end up eating, people will eat the truma. And that was one reason, which would make sense to say the Mishnah, this Mishnah, because then if that's the case, what are we worried? That she's still in her father's house, she shouldn't be eating truma yet. Okay. Masar ha'av l'shluchei habal, harehi b'reshut habal. Oh, right. The other reason, right. The other reason was if the engagement breaks off, and then we don't want her to have eaten truma when she really shouldn't have. Okay. Masar ha'av l'shluchei habal, harehi b'reshut habal. Amar Rav, misirata lakol chutz mitruma. Rav says this means for everything except for truma. Okay? Meaning, truma is not enough. They have to actually be married. Okay? But going to the Shluchei HaBaal would be relevant for everything else. We're going to see what all these other things are. Rav Asi Amar Af L'Truma. Even for Truma, she gets to start eating Truma as soon as she gets handed over to the husband. So first, before we get to the other opinions, you'll see there's another two opinions from the chart, but now we're already going to ask a question of Rav Asi. Eiti Be Rav Huna L'Rav Asi. V'Amre L'Achia Barav L'Rav Asi. Okay? Somebody asked a question of Rav Asi. L'Holam Hi B'Reshut Ha'av Ad Shetikanes L'Chupa. Here it says, right, until she goes into the chuppah. Amar lehu, lav amina lehu, didn't I tell you? Okay, Amar lehu, Rav says to him, lav amina lehu, didn't I not tell you? Lo tizlu batar ifcha. Don't bring, quote me a source that can be explained in different ways. Yachol lishnuye lehu, I can explain to you, misirata zoi knisata lechupa. In other words, knisa l'chupa is a broad term. Like I said in the beginning, nobody really knows exactly what mesira l'chupa is. Okay? So therefore, knisa l'chupa. So therefore, he says, don't quote me a source that can be explained in different ways. You're saying that contradicts what I'm saying, but really, it could mean knisata l'chupa, and there it could mean the same thing as mesira. Mesira l'chatan could be knisata l'chupa, and therefore, not a question. Ushmuel amar liyerushata. Okay, Shmuel says, what's the issue here? In terms of him being Yoresh her, if she's to die. If she dies at that point, then he gets the Nidunya. Mm-hmm. Rish Lakish amar liktubata. Okay, what does that mean? That liktubata, right, so the Gemara is going to ask right now, ketubata mahi, di'i meta yaret la. What does it mean, ketubata? The he gets her ketuba money, right? What's the ketuba? The ketuba is also the nedunya, right? She brings in stuff to the marriage, and there's certain things that when she dies, he inherits. So basically, they're saying that would be the same thing as what Shmuel said, right? Hainu de Shmuel. Ketubata means Yerusha. It's all the same thing. So Amar Ravina, Lomar, he doesn't mean ketubata, what you thought it meant, that he's Yoresh the ketuba. It means ketubata me acher mane. Here's a really interesting halacha. Once she's handed over to the husband, if he dies and she gets remarried, her ketuba is only 100 at this point. Even though what?
They haven't had sex,
right? And the whole thing is, right, generally it's a betula versus a non-betula. But what do they say? Once she's handed over to him, she's already considered a married woman and already her ketubah drops down to mana, which is interesting. Not so fair to her, but...
Must be a minority, yeah.
Right, I don't think everybody agrees with this, but that's how they explain it away. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina de'amr trevayu misiratala kol af l'truma. Okay, they say just like Rav Asi said. Now we're going to bring a koshi on most of the opinions. Everyone except for Shmua. Meitive. Halach ha'av im shluchei ha'ba'al. O shalchu shluchei ha'av im shluchei ha'ba'al. It's going to be a long bright here. Take us till mostly the end of the daf. The father goes with the shluchei ha'ba'al, or the shluchei of the father go with the shluchei ha'ba'al. Okay, so the father's still in the picture. O shaheita chatzir baderech v'nichnisayimo lalim. Okay, they stop on the way, and there's a chatzir, and they go there, and they go sleep there. Even though her ketuba, meaning the nedunya, all the stuff that the father's planning to give them, is still in the father's house, meta, what?
It's already in the husband's house.
Oh, sorry. Right. Sorry. Thank you. Even though all the nedunya stuff is in the husband's house, meta aviha yorsha. If she dies, all the stuff goes back. Okay, even though, right, why is it important it's in the husband's house? Because I'm a simcha chavero la haraya, right? Like, he always, you have the strength in you if it's in your property. But even so, she's not yet considered in the husband's property, even though they might have slept together in that place. Okay, we don't know what happened there, but they were sleeping. They were in a place where they went to sleep anyway. Aviha yorsha. It goes back to the father because there wasn't knisa l'chupayim. Masar ha'av l'shluchei ha'bal, because the father was still there, remember. But in this case, Masar ha'av l'shluchei ha'bal, Osha masru shluchei ha'av l'shluchei ha'bal, Osha ita lo chatzir baderech, v'nichnisayimo l'shum nisu'in. There was a chatzir on the way, and they said, we're going into this place to sleep for the sake of marriage. Af al pisha ketubata b'beit avia, okay, even if, that's why I got confused, in this case, even if the ketubah is still in the father's house, meita ba'ala yorsha. Okay, the husband gets it because... They right. They were again. What's knisa l'chupa? They were miyached in a place, right? L'shem nisuin. Bamed. But here's the important part of the brayta. Bamed varim amurim leyerushata. This is all only as it relates to the yerusha. Aval l'truma ein isha ochelet b'truma ad shetikanes l'chupa. Okay, so this goes against all the people who said that it's for other things, right? Rav said it's mesirat alakol. Rav Asi says it's even for truma. Rish Lakish says it's for the ketubata, okay? That she's considered. So now they say tiyuvta dekulu tiyuvta. Okay, this is a contradiction to all the other opinions except for Shmuel. Last part we're going to do for today. Hagufa kasha. The brayta itself is problematic though. Amarta nichnesayim olalin. Ta'ama delalin. Hastama l'shem nisuin. And emasepa nichnesayim olashem nisuin. Hastama lalin. It doesn't talk about a stam case, right? Generally, when we have a particular thing, it's saying, if they went in to sleep, just to sleep, right? It seems that a stam case, we assume then they're going for nisuin. And therefore, it would be marriage. But the second case says, if they went l'shem nisuin, which means if they didn't say what they were going for, it would be stama, and it wouldn't be considered marriage. Only if they specifically go l'shem marriage. So therefore, it's unclear what the stama is. So Amravashi, stame, stame, katane. Both of them are really talking about stam cases, where they didn't tell you, we're going into this room for nisuin, or we're going into this room just to go to bed. Okay, so now, how does it work then? Stam chatzir dida lalin. Stam chatzir dide l'nisuin. The question is, where was the chatzir? If the chatzir was in her property, then it means they were just going to sleep and not l'shem nisuin. And if the chatzer was in his property, then the idea was to do it l'shem nisuin. Okay, we'll stop here for today because the next thing starts a new issue about the issue of at what point, then we go back to our Motzi Shemra and all those cases, at what point is she considered married for the sake of switching from skila, naramu rasa, to znut of chenek, of, you know, a married woman, an eshadish. So that's going to be the question. And then it's going to get into, since I know you won't be here, Donna, tomorrow, you asked about the Nara by Mafute.
Yeah.
So this is where we're going to see the source about the Nara. They really, it's not so clear cut, but it seems that they're learning the Nara from the Moshe Shemra case. They're going to say this drasha that we actually saw before, Nara v'lo bogeret. And they basically, it seems to me that it's just applied across the board to all these situations. Since they're all kind of similar,
right.
So that it basically means she's a Nara, and it comes from this, you know, the Nara Murasa, the Pasuk is, 1 second, it's from, which Pasuk? Kiyen Nara Betula, right? Murasa Le'ish, Umitza'a Ish Ba'ir V'Shechavima. So they learn from that Nara, Nara V'lo Betula, and that's, I think, where they, I'm sorry, Nara, the other ones, Betula V'lo Betula, Murasa V'lo Nesua, Nara V'lo Bogeret. And it seems clear that it's all learned from that to all the other cases. You eventually.